Welcome. I'm Eric Fleming, host of A Moment with Eric Fleming, the podcast of our time. I want to personally thank you for listening to the podcast. If you like what you're hearing, then I need you to do a few things. First, I need subscribers. I'm on Patreon at patreon.com/A Moment with Eric Fleming. Your subscription allows an independent podcaster like me the freedom to speak truth to power and to expand and improve the show. Second, leave a 5-star review for the podcast on the streaming service you listen to it. That will help the podcast tremendously. Third, go to the website, momenteric.com. There you can subscribe to the podcast, leave reviews and comments, listen to past episodes, and even learn a little bit about your host. Lastly, don't keep this a secret like it's your own personal guilty pleasure. Tell someone else about the podcast. Encourage others to listen to the podcast and share the podcast on your social media platforms, because it is time to make this moment a movement. Thanks in advance for supporting the podcast of our time. I hope you enjoy this episode as well. Hello, and welcome to another Moment with Eric Fleming. I am your host, Eric Fleming. And I've got something on my mind today. But before I let my mind spill out on this microphone, let's go to a moment of news with Grace G.
Thanks, Eric. A U.S. Army reservist who killed 18 people in a shooting spree in Lewiston, Maine, was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound after a manhunt. Armored Israeli forces attacked the Gaza Strip's main city, leading to more international appeals for protection of Palestinian civilians. Israel said it freed a soldier from Hamas captivity and continues to target militant strongholds. U.S. Congressman Dean Phillips of Minnesota has announced his challenge to President Joe Biden for the Democratic presidential nomination, citing the need to repair the economy and the country. Former U.S. Vice President Mike Pence ended his presidential campaign, failing to convince Republican voters he was the better alternative to Donald Trump. The United Auto Workers have reached tentative agreements with the Detroit 3 automakers, ending 6 weeks of strikes with record pay hikes for workers. U.S. Representative George Santos pled not guilty to a 23-count indictment accusing him of an array of corruption, including money laundering and illegally receiving unemployment benefits. An Illinois man charged with murder and hate crimes for stabbing a 6-year-old Muslim boy, Wadea Al-Fayoum, to death and wounding his mother, pled not guilty in court. A federal judge ruled that the current congressional map in Georgia violates the Voting Rights Act by diluting black votes, ordering lawmakers to draw a new map. A U.S. jury found the National Association of Realtors and several brokerages liable for $1.78 billion in damages for conspiring to inflate commissions for home sales. And Minister Louis Farrakhan, leader of the Nation of Islam, has filed a $5 billion lawsuit against the Anti-Defamation League for allegedly falsely characterizing him as an anti-Semite. I am Grace G., and this has been A Moment of News.
All right, Grace, thank you so much for that moment of news. And now, what's on my mind? So, ladies and gentlemen, I have seen a lot in politics during my time. And, you know, I was talking with somebody recently, and, you know, just some of the conversation we were getting into and some of the discussion that the topics, I guess, that we were talking about, he made the observation that I had been exposed to a lot of things at a young age. And he kind of made it seem like it was a blessing. And you know, I guess in a sense, it has been to have a privilege to be in a position to try to shape public policy in my younger years. But it also was combined with the education I got at Jackson State, you know, and the experiences I had leading up to getting elected. Those, you know, I was exposed to a lot of stuff. Now, since I never got to the national office I sought, there's some things that, you know, some inside ball playing that I'm hadn't been exposed to. And when I tell you that people in the U.S. Congress at the presidential level and all that play at a different level than those of us at the state level, I think that's understating it. You know, when you run for a national office, you get exposed to certain things. But it's nothing like being in the position, right? And what you're exposed to. And I'll kind of dive into more of that piece as an outside observer of that a little later. But there's some things that you do know, right? There's tricks in the game. And one of the major tricks that's utilized in politics is misinformation. It's almost gotten to an obnoxious art form now, but it's been around. You know, you take a piece of information and you twist it around for your benefit or whatever the case may be. All of us have done it. That's been in the political game to try to shape debate, right? And to get support one way or the other. And it's not exactly something to be proud of, but it's something that's done. And, you know, but in order to overcome it, it's just that old saying we say in the Black community, game recognizes game, right? So the game I want to talk about to start off the podcast is dealing with this group called the Alliance for Fair and Equitable Policy. Now, I don't know who these people are. From the limited research I could gather, it's a group that's registered as a 501c4. In Richmond, Virginia. And that's about it. I don't know who the players are in that or whatever. But they got my attention because I was listening to one of my many podcasts that I like to listen to. And it was obviously one geared toward a Black audience. Because the way this commercial comes on, it's kind of like putting you on alert if you're a Black person. And they identify themselves, well, they start off in saying that Black folks, and I'm paraphrasing the commercial, but it's like you're saying Black folks have been dealing with issues of crime and inequities and criminal justice, yada, yada. And we need to stand up to that. Right. And then they start talking about menthol cigarettes. And I was like, what? And so what this commercial is saying is that President Joe Biden is going out of his way to ban menthol cigarettes. And that's going to have a major impact on the black community, because all of a sudden now police are going to start harassing black folks, and there's going to be this whole underground criminal enterprise smuggling cigarettes and all that stuff. And it's going to make our communities unsafe. So they give out a number to call President Biden to ask him not to ban menthol cigarettes, right? And they identify themselves as this organization, the Alliance for Fair and Equitable Policy. So, you know, being inquisitive, I went to their website, which doesn't have the full name on there. It says AllianceForFairPolicy.org. So if you try to put in Alliance for Fair and Equitable Policy, you won't. That's the website it'll direct you to. And it starts off, it says, "Our country, our voice, our rights." And so on the open, I'm going to read the opening, what's on the homepage, their statement, mission statement, I guess. It says, "The Alliance for Fair and Equitable Policy is committed to reversing the dangerous, harmful, and widespread consequences of misguided laws in America against its citizens. For decades, rigid public institutions and their policies have severely impacted the lives of millions of families, leading to vast disparities in housing access, economic standing, and voting agency. By pursuing genuine collective solutions to these issues, we can overcome our checkered history and create a more perfect union for all, regardless of race, ethnicity, creed, gender, sexual orientation, or ability." And that sounds great, right? It should be a goal that all of us want. But normally on a website, you kind of have like a little menu that would direct you to other pages. You know, talk about how this organization got started, how you can donate to it, how it, you know, what it's, you know, are there any campaigns or anything that's going on? But that's the only page that's on the website, that statement. That's it. And it was put up like in 2021. That's what the copyright date says. So this has been up for a couple of years and they haven't added to it, but now they've got money to run ads on black podcasts. And maybe, because I rarely listen to regular radio anymore, but maybe it's running on black radio too, stating that Joe Biden's about to take away our menthol cigarettes and black folks should be up in arms about that. Right? So why should we care about Joe Biden wanting to get rid of menthol cigarettes? Right? So here's a stat that is, let me see if I can find it real quick, because it was something that was pretty telling about why this was targeted toward us. So of all the menthol cigarettes that are purchased in the United States, 85% of them are bought by black folks, African Americans. Now, an overwhelming majority of the population doesn't smoke anymore, at least not regular cigarettes, right? Ever since the lawsuit that happened, starting with the Mississippi Attorney General Mike Moore going after the tobacco companies and then several states thereafter, tobacco smoking has gone down. And I can't cite a national thing in my mind, but I know in Mississippi, it had gone down to like less than a quarter of the population was smoking. So, you know, divide 3 million up by 4. And that's how many people are still smoking in Mississippi. Now, that's still a decent number, and I guess it's keeping the tobacco companies going if that's kind of a national trend, right? Even with a quarter of 330 million people, that's still a lot of smokers, but not as many as it used to be, right? Because smoking used to be fashionable. That was kind of, as a matter of fact, the thing. You know what I'm saying? You were successful. I mean, and all they used to advertise cigarettes on magazines and TV, right? You remember the Marlboro Man and the billboards, right? But, you know, since the late 90s, early 2000s, smoking cigarettes has gone down. Now, it's still popular to smoke cigars. That's kind of a trend. It's very popular to vape, right? But actual cigarettes are going down. But of the cigarettes that are being sold, especially the menthol flavored ones, 85% of them are African Americans. And if you know, like I know, Newports are the cigarettes of choice for black folks, right? It's just a common thing. You show up somebody's house that smokes, they're probably smoking Newports. Now, I understand there's cool menthols and other menthols out there, but primarily it's Newports. So, so basically what these folks are saying is like, Joe Biden's about to take away y'all's Newports. Y'all need to call him and stop him from doing that because it's going to create all sorts of problems. So here's the thing. First of all, as I've stated, this has been going on for over 20 years. And really, the plan was by 2009 to get rid of all of the flavored cigarettes. And they kind of did that, except for menthol, right? And so, you know, menthol has survived. And so 10 years ago, they had planned that, you know, they had started a study to try to get rid of it. And, you know, some states had banned menthol cigarettes. I think California is one. But, you know, overall, they're still selling them. And so, you know, there's been a move, and it hasn't happened in the previous two administrations. And the FDA had set a deadline for August of 2023 to officially ban them. But for some reason, they weren't ready to implement it in August. And so now it's kind of out there because this commercial has started running. And this literally started running within the last week. So why is this even an issue? Well, this is a target. See, when you have an organization that you really can't track down who they really are and who are the proponents and what they're pushing, based on what they are throwing out there, you kind of got a sense that they're trying to get black voters to say, hey, Joe Biden's trying to take away our cigarettes. At least it's for the black voters that vote, that smoke. He's trying to take away our cigarettes, man. That's going too far. I don't know if I can support him. Right? You see where I'm going with that? So what they're trying to do is create something, a stir, where they know the majority of black people are not going to say, I'm not going to not vote for Joe Biden because of menthol cigarettes. Really? Because of Newports? Really? No. But they want just enough to drop the black vote, right? Because there's already some agents out there. There are people out there that, you know, for whatever reason, whether they claim it's about reparations, whether they claim it's about vaccines or, you know, whatever. Immigration, you know, they're trying to discourage black people from voting for Joe Biden. I mean, just be plain. I mean, Cornel West is being financed to try to take away black votes. Whoever New Labels puts out, No Labels, I'm sorry, puts out there. You know, there's a brother who used to be over the NAACP, Ben Chavis, who was advocating for that option, right? That's who they'll stick on my show or any other black show, right? If we reach out, they're going to say, oh, well, Reverend Chavis can come on, right? So we know that there are people out there already trying to whittle away at President Biden. Now, whether it's for Donald Trump or not, or whether it's to send a message or not, it's still really unclear. Because the guy that's supposedly over blocks for Trump is trying to figure out whether he's going to cop a plea deal or not at this particular point in Georgia. But he wasn't the only one out there. And, you know, there are legitimate black Republicans. When I say legitimate, meaning that they are actually identified as Republicans, and whether they're in the MAGA section or the traditional conservative section, they're going to support the Republican nominee, who more likely will be Donald Trump, regardless of what happens in March. Right? So we got that. But, you know, it's a fact that Donald Trump got 75 million votes last election, which is the most that any incumbent president ever received. 75 million. The problem was his opponent, Joe Biden, got 81 million. More votes than any other human being ever to be president of the United States. 81 million votes. More people voted in the 2020 election than ever before. And so, knowing that because of some of the revelations that's happened, if Donald Trump is a guy, I think 75 million is the peak. I don't think he's going to exceed that. I don't think he's going to even reach that again. Right? So we got to make sure, if you're on the Trump or Republican team, that we got to whittle down that deficit between 81 and 75. That's 6 million votes. So you got to knock that down some kind of way. So let's throw out there that Joe Biden is trying to get rid of your menthol cigarette. Now, I know that's not on his agenda right now. There's quite a few other things that's on his agenda. But this story is out there. And, you know, you can pick it up. I've picked up bits from CNN and BBC and all that. To even understand if this is a legitimate thing. But again, this is something the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, has been pushing for nearly two decades or over two decades. And so, you know, it's not anything new to them. It's not anything new to the tobacco companies. And they may be the ones financing this. I don't know. All I know is that there's this commercial out there. And they're trying to convince you as black people, especially those of you who smoke menthol cigarettes, that maybe Joe Biden might not be your guy. Or if he does, if this ban does go into effect, he'll be blamed for it because it'll be under his watch. Right? And then maybe just turn off just enough black voters to not vote for Joe Biden. And that's kind of the thing. Now, there have been some civil rights organizations that have been pushing for the ban, right? Because of the targeting. If 85% of the people that smoke a particular cigarette are black folks, that's targeting. That's targeting that market. Because it was like in the 1950s, it was only like 10% of the black population was smoking menthol cigarettes. So, you know, over the years, they've developed this market. So naturally, the tobacco companies are going to fight back because that's money, right? And so what they want to do is do it in a way that vilifies the president. So that their guy, more than likely Donald Trump, can get back in there. So the question I have for folks is that Newport more important than your freedom? Let me ask it again. Is a Newport cigarette more important than your freedom? Right? Because being unbeknownst, I guess, to these folks, there's already bootleg cigarettes. When the lawsuits kicked in, right, some of the states, you know, put taxes, higher taxes on tobacco, you know, especially cigarettes. And, you know, in some states, it's cheaper to buy cigarettes than other states. And so, you know, in Chicago, for example, a lot of people that smoke go to Indiana. They'll take that Chicago Skyway and pop right over there, first store that they get them a carton of cigarettes because it's cheaper to buy them in Indiana than it is in Illinois. So that's a legal way of doing it, but there are some people that will go to Indiana and buy all these cigarettes and stuff or steal them. Or they'll steal them in Chicago. And then they'll sell them, right? The whole issue with Eric Garner, right, was he was being accused of selling loose cigarettes. And that's why those officers killed him, because he was selling loose cigarettes in New York. Which is why they didn't get a ban for cigarettes, the menthol cigarettes in New York. That didn't pass, because it was in the shadow of the Eric Garner tragedy. You know, people equated banning the cigarettes with increased police activity, which is kind of alluded to in this commercial too, right? So, you know, more encounters with law enforcement, I think the way he phrased it. So anyway, you know, so that they have a basis to put that commercial out there. And that basis is what they're hoping will get you as black folks to vote against Joe Biden, or at least those of you who smoke. Right? Because it's apparent that the majority of black people that smoke menthol flavored cigarettes. So if they're going to ban menthol, then, you know, but like I said, it's been coming. Right. And it's not something that just popped up. It's not something that said, you know, President Biden said, oh, you know, we need to do this. No, it's been in the works since before Obama got elected. But it's been out there. And Obama was a smoker. I don't know if he's gone back to it or not, but he was a smoker prior to him getting elected president. Right. So, you know, there's that. game recognizes game. So, you know, y'all just be wary of that kind of thing. When people come at you, well, man, I ain't going to vote for Joe Biden because he's trying to take away my Newports. You need to ask him the question. That's why I threw the question out there. Are your Newports more important than your freedom? If you say yes, then you will vote that way or not vote at all, which is really what they're hoping for, because they don't really think that black folks are just going to switch to Donald Trump because of cigarettes. They'll just figure they just won't vote. Right? That's what they're hoping. But if your freedom is more important, which should equate to your health, then don't fall for the trick. Don't fall for this okie doke. Right? Now, are you going to be mad? Yeah. But I'd rather be mad and free than happy and enslaved or further oppressed or have my rights taken away. Because I really can't be happy if I'm oppressed. I hope y'all feel what I'm saying. All right. And we'll get into some more tricks and missteps or whatever that the Democrats are doing on the other side. All right, and so we are back. Now, there's some other stuff that's going on too. Now, there's been some news stories. That guy that was over FTX, I want to say Sam Brinkman Fried, he's been found guilty of fraud. You know, I'm sure Steph Curry and Tom Brady are happy about that because he cost them millions of dollars, along with thousands, nearly millions of other people. Right. But I point them out because they got implicated in his scam. Even the Miami Heat got implicated in the scam because they actually sold these folks the naming rights to their stadium, you know, their arena. But yeah, I mean, you know, those high profile folks, you know, but they were doing commercials for him. So, you know, they were kind of catching heat initially when this all broke. And, you know, he was giving interviews and talking about how scared he was and all that stuff about going to jail. Well, you're going to jail and you're going to be in jail for a long time. Probably like Madoff kind of years. You know, because we were talking about billions of dollars. You know, and to his credit, he got on the stand and basically said, look, it wasn't fraud. It was just bad business decisions I made. I wasn't trying to swindle people out of money. But he had some other folks that pled out and testified against him and said contrary. So jury believed them instead of him, and he's going to jail, right? And then you got George Santos, right, the congressman from New York. The members actually voted to boot him out. Well, they took a vote to boot him out, but he needed 2/3 of the House to do it, and that wasn't going to happen because there were some Democrats that didn't vote to boot him out because in their mind, they didn't want the Republicans to try to do that to one of their people. I get it, but hopefully none of the Democrats elected from this point forward will be charged with 23 counts of fraud and, you know, all this other stuff. Yeah. There's that. And of course, the Republicans didn't want to boot him out because, you know, the one, at least a lot of the ones that weren't in New York State, didn't want to boot him out because they didn't want to lose the seat because the rate is going, a Democrat's going to win that seat, right? But, I mean, they're going to win the seat anyway. If he's on the ballot, you know, this is the phrase where the yellow dog Democrat kicks in. Old Yella is running against George Santos. Old Yella will be the first dog in the U.S. Congress. I mean, that's how it's going to go. Now, they're hoping Santos will get primaried out and they'll have somebody legit, you know, running in the general in 2024. But it's kind of hard to beat an incumbent congressman, even a crooked one. Right? It is what it is. I mean, history bears that out. I mean, Bob Menendez on the Democratic side, I mean, he's sitting in hearings that's dealing with classified information. And we're like, why is he sitting in these hearings? I mean, he's being accused of being an agent for a whole another country. That's kind of like in the oath that you're not supposed to do that. Right? I mean, just being accused of that, the last thing he need to be is sitting in a meeting where classified information is coming out, but he sat there. So that's on Chuck Schumer and them, right? And, you know, like I said, Al Franken did something inappropriate and they ran him out of Washington. But what Al Franken did, there were no charges brought against him. It was a claim. It was verified. He said he was sorry. And the Democrats said, you got to go. And then it's being charged with stuff, right? And we're sitting up here saying Donald Trump shouldn't even be allowed to run. But y'all letting Menendez sitting in on classified information hearings. And so this is kind of the thing that I wanted to get into about missteps. See, it's tough being an elected official. You are not going to please anybody. When I was in Jackson for homecoming, one of my friends was like saying, bruh, why don't you come back and run for Mayor Jackson? I said, that is the most ungrateful job in America. You are the leader of the largest city of the poorest state in the nation. Right? And you literally didn't have water for like a month. Your infrastructure crumbled. And with the political climate we got now, there's no bipartisan relationship. So the Republicans in the state government is not going to give money. I mean, not that the Democrats or the Republicans that was in state government when I was there wanted to give Jackson any money, but they really not going to give Jackson any money. Now they're cracking jokes about Jackson. And the seat of power is in Jackson. They didn't have water at the governor's mansion, but he's cracking jokes about how Jackson is. Right? If logistically they could move the Capitol out of Jackson, they would do it. And who wants to be mayor other than the brother that's sitting there? God bless you, Shokwe. You know what I'm saying? Who would want that job, right? So being an elected official is tough. It's tough whether you're the mayor of Jackson, the mayor of Atlanta, the mayor of Chicago, the mayor of New York, the mayor of D.C., the governor of any of the 50 states, let alone state legislators, city council members, congressmen and women. It's tough being an elected official because you've got to balance all of these stuff. And you're going to hear from people on both sides of the issue. You're going to run into lobbyists on both sides of the issue. People that are paid to throw issues at you or ideas even. Right? And so, you know, outside of the United States Congress, people don't get paid a lot to do that. You know, There's no money in it. You make more money being the superintendent of a major city school district than you would being the mayor of that same city. In Atlanta, I think it's like four times more, for example. So, you know, and that person's appointed by a school board that's elected, right? And even school boards now are being contentious because of all these crazy Mom for Liberty candidates running to try to get in so they can ban books and do finish the job of the United Daughters of the Confederacy and whitewash history and all that stuff, right? So even that's contentious. Running for judge, because if you run for judge, which is really the worst position to run for in an elected position, because you can't talk about anything but how good of a lawyer you were or what a nice person you are. You can't talk about, well, if I get this particular case, this is how I would rule and yada, yada. No, don't say that. You can't say that. There's certain restrictions that the bar associations in each state put on what you can say. Because if you get elected and then that case comes before you, then you'll have to recuse yourself because you've already kind of prejudged, you know, let the world know how you're going to judge on it. Right? And even though most trials are jury trials, judges control the courtroom, so they can kind of guide it a certain way if, you know, it's just a bad look. So when you run for judge, you're just basically saying, hey, and that's why a lot of judges, once they get in, they're kind of like unopposed forever, which never should be the case. But I get it because it's hard running for a position where you literally have to act like you're running for homecoming king and queen. You just have to be popular. And a better campaigner than the person in the position or your opponent running for the position if it's open, right? Nonetheless, the point is, it's hard enough as it is. But it's even more perilous now because we don't really have an option like we had when I was younger. See, it used to be an option that you would either, especially in positions with policy making, you would want, but I guess you could say that even with judges, you want either a conservative viewpoint or a liberal viewpoint, right? Ideally, you want somebody that kind of navigates in the middle, but usually people lean one way or the other, you know? And there's other options. I mean, like I said, there's libertarians and Green Party and all that stuff, right? But it basically came down, and so the Democrats historically identified as the liberal party in modern times, and the Republicans in modern times have been considered conservative, right? Because in history, sometimes the business community, the Republicans have always supported. The business community would have been considered radical, say, in the 1860s. You know, and even, you know, folks remind people that the Democratic Party was split between the Northern Democrats and the Southern Democrats over the issue of slavery. So, you know, it's all relative. But the bottom line is people tend to vote for somebody that lines up with their belief. If they're more liberal leaning, they're going to vote for the Democrat. If they're conservative leaning, they're going to vote for Republican. That's the way it used to be. Now, it's kind of like the people who are really conservative feel compelled to vote Republican, but their most extreme wing is taken over. So they're not really comfortable with that. They'll do it. But, you know, they get real defensive if you say, oh, so you believe in this and believe in that. No, I'm just, but
But there's some things that they do that more so than the Democrat. I just don't like Joe Biden. I just don't like AOC. I just don't like Nancy Pelosi. I just don't like these liberals. And these are these liberals that you talk about are the ones who are trying to keep government normal. Right? These are the people that are trying to say, hey, do you want an election in 2028? Do you want an election in 2026 even? Because if you don't vote for us in 2024, kind of rolling the dice. Kind of taking a chance. So, you know, that's why I say we don't really have a choice. Because if the best of the Republican Party is Mike Johnson and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz and Paul Gosar and Lauren Boebert, these are the best you have to offer. And Andrew Clyde, these are the best you have to offer. Right? Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley and Tim Scott, these are the best you have to offer. And this is really giving us a choice. I know people are saying, oh, Biden's too old. Well, I'm glad there's been a couple of polls out that said, yes, about 44% of the American people polled in two separate polls said that both Trump and Biden are too old. Right? That we need to have somebody younger. However, when these polls parsed it down and said, okay, so we get it. Y'all think they're too old. But if these are the only two choices you got, who are you going to vote for? The majority of folks said Biden. Which I think is, you know, two separate polls came with the same result. And I know polls can be kind of sketchy in this day and age and all that stuff, but that's kind of an interesting trend to pick up on. And I think the majority of people are going to kind of fall with that. Now, that people are not happy that they got to choose between an octogenarian and somebody that will be an octogenarian if they are elected to a second term. I get it. And especially old white men. I get it. But if one is trying to at least give you a chance to still have a voice in the process compared to a guy that basically said, once he gets in there, we might as well just have a whole new constitution because we're just going to change everything. We're going to get rid of the FBI. We're going to shut that down. We're going to get out of NATO. We're going to get out of it. We're going to turn all this up. We're going to fire all these black federal employees. I mean, you know, and that goes back to the New Point thing, right? So if you're a federal employee that smokes Newports, you've got a decision to make, right? Do I vote for the guy that wants to ban my cigarettes or do I want to vote for the guy that's going to get rid of my job? I mean, that's a real choice. If you're a black government worker that smokes Newports, that's where you are. Seriously, though. But yet, the Democrats have found a way, like with this whole situation with, and I don't know what it is. I don't know what the gap is as far as communicating, right? But this whole Israel-Gaza conflict has really divided up the country. You have people who are pro-Palestinian and you have people who are pro-Israel, right? The president says Israel has a right to defend itself, and I agree with that. But I don't agree with bombing the hell out of everybody to go after an organization, right? The United States may have done it, right? But that's not their strategy. Their strategy is to target areas where, boom. Now, these so here's the thing, question I have for the Israeli Defense Forces. If you know that these people have, Hamas has created this whole underground network, and most of their main strategic points are under places like churches and hospitals. They did that for a reason, because they figured that you were not smart enough or capable enough to come up with a defensive strategy other than to bomb the hospitals or the churches to get to them. And you're playing right into their hands if you do that. Now, the first hospital that got bombed, that was one of the Palestinian folks supporting Hamas organizations, and they just didn't know where to aim their rocket. And it's unfortunate for those people who died at that hospital. But like, one of Hamas's main staging points is under, I think, the biggest hospital in Gaza City. They already tried to bomb one spot, and they basically killed a church. I mean, blew up a church where Palestinian Christians were seeking refuge. There was a former U.S. congressman, lost two of his relatives in that. So my question with the IDF is, are you incapable of fighting a different strategy and figuring out a different way to go after those targets underground, or are you just stupid? And that's the only way you know how to fight is just to bomb stuff above ground. If you know your enemy is underground, why have you not trained your people to fight underground? You got the city surrounded. That's great. They're in tunnels going up under you. What does that mean? And so, you know, a lot of us are saying that, right? But the Biden administration is not exactly saying that. Now, I didn't get to see Secretary of State Blinken's testimony, which was interrupted by protesters a lot. By the time Secretary of Defense Austin got up there, that basically the people were just holding their hands up, painted red, you know, saying the blood was on America's hands, all that Palestinian blood. But, you know, Brother Austin got up there and basically said, we're not for civilians getting killed, randomly getting killed. We're not for that. We have expressed to Israel, hey, you know, we don't endorse that. We want you to go after Hamas, but we don't want you to kill innocent Palestinians. They've said that publicly. But for those folks in the Palestinian communities, like in Michigan and Ohio, which are swing states, by the way, they're basically saying, well, no, we're not going to support Biden if Israel keeps doing what they're doing. And they basically kind of set a deadline saying, well, if they don't do it by such and such a date, you know, then we're not going to support them. And I've heard state legislators of Palestinian descent basically state that, right? So I don't know if that's fair or not, because the United States can basically say, hey, look, y'all need to develop a ceasefire. Well, if Israel doesn't agree to that, if Hamas doesn't agree to that, then what can President Biden do? You know, and some people are saying, well, we need to cut off their money. Well, you could do that. That is an option. It's like $14 billion that was supposed to be in that package. You know, we could cut that off. But the question becomes, are we infringing on Israel's right to defend itself by doing it? That's why it's not easy. You know, yeah, I'm Joe Biden. I want to get every Palestinian American to vote for me in the next election, but I got to figure out what's the best way to do it. I can reach out to Israel and say, hey, you have a ceasefire, but if Israel says no, which apparently they have, what are you going to do? If you cut off their money, what else is going to happen? They're not going to stop because we cut their money off. Maybe they will, but I don't think so. If you understand any glimmering of the history of this conflict, it's money is not the issue. It's really going to take the United Nations to kind of step in and say, hey, stop. But the guy from the United Nations kind of one-sided it, you know, and I get it. You got right-wing extremists running the government in Israel, which is another reason why I'm not so enthused with right-wing extremists running the government here. Because the mindset the Israelis have, just imagine we get in a conflict, a legitimate conflict with another nation, how these folks gonna act? And a lot of them never served in the military, right? I'm just saying. Nonetheless, you know, when people start threatening, well, we're not going to support the president, then the question becomes, do you want the United States to be Gaza? Because if you decide, well, I'm not going to support Biden because of what's happening in the real Gaza, then you possibly can have a president that'll turn the place where you live, the United States, into Gaza. And especially for you, because he's made it clear he doesn't want any of you. I don't care if you say that you're Christian, you're Jewish, you're Muslim. If you're Palestinian, he don't want you. The only immigrants he wants are people from Norway and Finland. Sweden, which is ironic because they're getting ready to join NATO and he doesn't want to fund NATO. Anyway. See how this is all like convoluted, confusing, and just not cut and dry stuff, right? What has to happen is that people in leadership have to be pragmatic and thoughtful. Emotional people sound good, giving speeches and getting you riled up and all that, but the people you actually want making the decisions are the ones that can maybe show empathy and maybe get a crowd motivated, but their more important skill is negotiating. Their more important skill is deliberating and making policy that would work, not just for us, but for the rest of the world. And for those people who still say, well, the United States shouldn't be involved in all this other stuff and it should be more concerned about domestic stuff, I want you to focus on candidates that can walk and chew gum at the same time. I want you to elect people who understand we have a certain obligation, a role in the world. And we have an obligation to make sure that our people are fulfilling a promise, a divine promise to live abundantly, right? We need people that can walk and chew gum at the same time. And I guess if I sold t-shirts, that's probably the t-shirt I would sell, because I think that's a basic concept that we need to get into our mind. Because what I'm seeing is there are a lot of uncoordinated people here mentally, They can't walk and chew gum at the same time. They can't make decisions about foreign policy and domestic policy. They have no clue. And their vision of domestic policy is so skewed. And so totalitarian in their thought that it goes against the very constitution that they swear to uphold. They're more concerned about the Bible they got their hand on than the constitution that they swear to defend. That's not being able to walk and chew gum at the same time. There is a reason why we have the position that we have, and there's a responsibility that we have to have it. Now, it doesn't make the job easy, but at the same time, it doesn't mean we can't do it. And it's going to take us as constituents to educate ourselves thoroughly enough that if we're going to get out here and make these kind of statements and make these kind of proclamations and make these kind of demands, we have to understand what the consequences are if those demands are not met. And I don't think people are thinking rationally. I think people are thinking emotionally because people are dying. And I get that. If this was happening in Africa somewhere, I'm sure many black people would be upset. Many, not all. I watch my Twitter feed, not all. But many. Right? So I don't, you know, I think the Democratic Party has to do a better job of conveying its message to folks. Because I have heard the president, I have heard his staff say that they are not in favor of millions of people being bombed homeless or being killed. They're not in favor of that. But somehow, some way, that's not translating to people. And so, you know, and these things don't happen overnight. There's got to be a meeting of the minds to get people to stop killing each other. Because when those emotions run over to the point where they actually are doing it, it's going to take a minute to get them to calm down. And I believe that every president, except Donald Trump, that every president that has dealt with a conflict has done their best and used their resources and their power to try to limit or stop that conflict and use whatever strategies they could. And a lot of them got criticized for what they did then. But nothing is instant when it comes to public policy. Nothing is instant when it comes to making decisions or negotiating. If that was the case, ask the people that went on strike at the auto workers. Ask the people that are still on strike at the actors. Professional hockey went a whole season without playing because the players couldn't agree with the owners. Negotiating takes time. You can't put demands on that. You can try, but it's not guaranteed. And if you want to stake the future of American democracy on trying to put a timetable on a conflict that's in another country, good luck with that. And good luck with accepting the consequences of the decision that you make. I'm not saying it's unreasonable to ask for a ceasefire. I am saying it's unreasonable to try to set a time or else we're not going to vote for you. I think that's not in your best interest. Because I'm looking at the options on the other side and I'm like, do I trust any of them to meet that deadline you put? No. They're not even going to acknowledge it. At least you've got the president currently in there sweating about it because he doesn't want to lose your support. But he understands that he can't realistically meet demands like that. And I'm not trying to defend the guy. I just want you as listeners, you as voters, to listen to somebody give a perspective that has actually had to make decisions, that has actually had to take votes on issues, that has actually introduced legislation to tell you that you're not going to get everything that you want when you want it. I'm not saying don't fight for it. I'm not saying be a shrinking violet on it. But at the same time, be realistic. Because it wasn't overnight that whatever rights you lost were lost. And some people will make the argument, well, you know, they did it Roe v. Wade. They took that away. No, no. There was a plan that people allowed to happen. You had to get a certain president elected. They had to get so many justices put on the Supreme Court that thought that way. And then, bam, that took years. So many years that an idea that actually had some public support, by the time they got the people in there to execute the plan, the country had changed its mind. And they're going to pay the price for it politically for that in certain places. It's not easy watching people get killed, no matter where it is, whether it's in the Gaza Strip or in Maine. It's not easy. And you have to do things to try to stop it. But if we can't get people to stop killing each other in the United States, how in the hell do you think the President of the United States is going to get people in a whole nother part of the world to stop shooting and killing each other? If you're committed to stopping violence, stop it here. Put your energy in stopping it here as well as the energy there. Because you can walk and chew gum at the same time too. You don't have to put all your emphasis on Palestine and Israel. When people in Maine, people in El Paso, people in Buffalo are getting killed. When they're walking into schools and churches and libraries and movie theaters and shopping malls and that. Do I need to go on? At concerts, can we do that too? If you're going to make a demand saying, I want my president to stop an international conflict, then you should want your president and your Congress, you should demand them to stop it here. And some of y'all are doing that. But I need y'all to be intelligent and I need y'all to be patient. And I need y'all to articulate what needs to be articulated. I don't want you to stop protesting, but I do want you to deal with the realities of the situation. That is not easy as snapping a finger or making a phone call to stop a war. That's not how that works. And I need you to be intelligent about which side that you're getting on. Because if you're pro-Israel, are you pro-bombing, killing innocent people? And if you're pro-Palestinian, are you pro-Hamas? Because if you are either one of those, you're not on my side. I'm not pro Hamas and I'm not pro killing innocent people. I am in favor of a country being able to defend itself. That's why I support Ukraine in their fight against Russia. But I'm not for terrorist organizations trying to dictate politics. Because terrorist organizations resort to violence to get attention. I think Puerto Rico should be a state or an independent nation, whichever one they want. But I don't think you need to bomb a federal building in Chicago to get that point across. You understand where I'm coming from? So don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Don't be extreme in trying to stop an extreme action. Be vociferous, but be intelligent. Be persistent, but be patient. And we can get what we want, and we can save the nation that we want to live in and continue to be the good neighbor for the world. We can do all that, but we gotta focus and get the emotion out of it and get our minds right. Because emotions ebb and flow. If you get so high, there's a crash coming. But if you focus in intelligently, you can see it through. Just think about that. Until next time.